And I ordered a bunch of sound dampening foam panels that I'm going to put on the walls in the closet so that when you go in there, it's just like super quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to make a closet spa.
Nice. Scotch.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 157 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam. I'm the blaster of web packets.
And that's it. Sam's gone this week. We'll talk about that. This is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is June 25, 2018. Before we start, we have a warning. Anything could happen on this show. There will be profanity, and we'll talk about stuff that only adults care about, probably. So if you're a child, you know, just go away, go play with some sticks, play some dirt, take one of those hoops with a stick, you know,
and then run, hit it a bunch.
Run that down the street, do whatever whatever's hip these days. All right, what's happening this week in the studio? It's been quiet.
Yeah.
Sam went to China. He's visiting his wife's family over there. So they are roaming around parks, getting up at 6 o'clock every morning and then hiking for apparently 17 hours a day.
And then going to sleep.
So he's been sending back pictures of apparently he's at the park that inspired the scene from Avatar with the floating mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And it very much looks like that.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
So that's kind of awesome. Now I kind of want to go there. I'm sure we'll hear quite a lot about that whole experience when he comes back.
I'm sure there'll be many stories of misadventures.
Yeah. And I think, you know, he just made kind of a quick comment about it. He's like, you know, it's given me a lot of things to think about life back home in the U.S. And I think that is something that does happen if you spend any kind of extended period of time in not Europe or maybe even Europe, because they're
really just
fairly
anywhere.
Different, but... Yeah, I mean, you just go somewhere else and you just realize a lot of the things that you are used to doing don't actually make any sense. And you could totally do everything a completely different way and it would also be just fine.
Yeah.
So that's always pretty interesting. Shure is also gone because he's going to 1 million weddings.
Yes.
Or one super long one. It's kind of unclear. Yeah, all I know is it's going to take a long time.
Yeah.
And he's off doing that. So it's just been Adam and me in the studio. We've just been... Programming. We just walk in, put our headphones on, and then just program for 33 hours.
It's pretty chill. And also, this is our last, I guess, hopefully our last episode recorded in the podcast dungeon.
Yes.
Because Patrick from Fat Bard is building us out in our new office. He's going to build out one of our little side rooms into our new podcast dungeon.
And it's going to be a dungeon with windows.
Yeah.
And it's going to be on the second floor.
Yeah, it's a really high dungeon.
I'm pretty sure dungeons can be elevated.
Oh, yeah, why not?
You know, there's that scene in Game of Thrones when they throw people in the dungeon that doesn't have any walls on the outside, and then it's just like a 1,000-foot cliff. That's a pretty good dungeon.
Yeah.
It's hard to get out of. So our new podcast room is going to be a lot like that.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah. Also, Shenana Jam, rating, it's done.
So
if you didn't do it, well, that's too bad.
Yep.
So hopefully everybody got their games rated. And so for those who are kind of new listeners and haven't heard all about this, the Shenana Jam was a game jam that we put on just a few weeks ago. And we ended up with almost 400 participants. We just missed it by one.
Just missed it. Well, then it kept on getting worse because then a person left, I think, every like 10 hours after that.
Yeah.
So it got all the way down to 396.
Yeah.
We're so close.
And I always thought this kind of interesting in terms of like, if you're in the jam, who has the presence of mind to go to the website and leave the jam? I would have forgotten about
it. Yeah, right. It's sort of, it's almost making a statement, you know?
Yeah, you're like, I don't want to be any part of this. Yeah. So we did have some people sort of bail at the very end there. But we ended up with 100-something game,
117
games. And so we had a rating system where people could go through and play each other's games and then evaluate and give people some feedback on that. And so once Sam gets back, we're going to pull down some of the top games and do a gameplay video, presumably with far better audio than what we did last year.
Yes.
Which was not as good as it could have been.
Did we even make that one public last year? Or was it just a...
I believe we did.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's coming up. I think Sam has gone even next week or next time we record.
Well, he's gone until next Monday.
But, which is when we record.
Yeah, but if he's alive enough, we could record on Tuesday. So he might.
Yeah, but he's going to be fucked up. But
that might just add some flavor to the proceedings. You know?
Yeah, I'm also curious to see how much weight he has gained.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of countries have this thing about food where you got to eat a shitload of it when you're a guest at someone's house. And if you're a guest for, you know, a couple of weeks,
you eat a lot of food.
Yeah. You're probably doubling your calorie intake.
Yeah. But he is also walking like 100 miles a day. So probably.
Yeah,
staves that off.
But if being at the gym has taught me anything, it's that you can walk 100 miles and it burns 8 calories.
That is true.
So I remember you can hop on an exercise bike and do that for 20 minutes. I think that's maybe like 100 something calories.
Yeah. I think running a mile is 100 calories.
Yeah, and then you glance at a Snickers bar and that's like 3 hours of work to undo it on the treadmill, which is why weight loss via exercise is insane.
Yep.
It's all about food. It's all about the food.
100%.
Yeah.
And then exercise is just all about being healthy, you know?
Yeah, it's the other part of it. But it's not used for what people think it's used for, you know? Although if you're Michael Phelps and you're swimming.
If you exercise enough.
If you're exercising for 6 to 8 hours a day and are therefore burning 3,000 or 4,000 calories, then that's a whole different thing. But I'm going to assume that a majority of our listeners are not training for the Olympics.
That's probably true.
Yeah. All right. Other news. Levelhead is going pretty good. It's in a weird spot right now where Sam packed up and shipped off to China. And so now I have this 2-week period where as the game programmer, I can tackle some of these bigger things that don't require any art. And one of the biggest problems we have to deal with is the problem of optimization. The game's going to be on mobile as well as desktop. And so having a game run well on desktop, not a big deal. Getting it to run well on an iPhone 5, it's a little bit more of a thing. So what I've been working on is we're calling it dynamic world generation, which is basically what Crashlands used, which is the idea that the level only exists in the visible area on the screen. Mm-hmm. And as you walk around, it disappears anywhere off screen. There actually is nothing there. And we generate the level as you walk around. So with Crashlands, that was easy because the world was procedurally generated. And so we didn't even know, you know, we didn't even know what was in the world until you went there. And then it was generated by an algorithm. But in Levelhead, this is different because players build levels. And so it's a predetermined thing, and everything in the level is often very interconnected.
Well, yeah, and things act on distances.
Yes.
But in Crashlands, things can only act on you if they are basically on the screen.
Yeah.
And so if we remove things the moment you walk off screen, then it's fine.
It's fine. So yeah, if you walk up and a tree suddenly appears, that tree just it's just doing its own thing, mm-hmm. you know? And if you ignore the tree and leave, it doesn't matter that we despawn it. It's fine. It's not going to hurt anybody.
Yeah, this is why there are a lot of things that we always kind of wanted to do in Crashlands that people have asked for that we basically just aren't doing. And most of it hinges on that fact. And so it includes stuff like people wanted to have events where creatures would come out from outside of the screen and, like, you know, come in and
like, oh, no, you don't understand. There is no such thing as outside.
Yeah, there's no such thing. And like, there's no such thing as your base, actually, because there's not that doesn't actually specify a location on the map.
Yeah, people say, I want creatures to attack my base. Well, what if you laid down 100 different sort of chunks of walls and built rooms in 50 different places?
Which one of those is your base?
Which one is your base?
Yeah.
Or are they all your base and now you have to defend 50 different places?
Is it
places?
Fallout 4 now?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting ideas that get thrown out there that they seem reasonable to a human brain.
Yeah.
Like, if creatures attacked my base, that would be cool. Because as a person, you know what your base is and you know what it means to have things attack your base.
Yep.
But translating that into actual instructions for the computer to do something with is
just a very different thing.
Mind-boggling.
Yeah.
So the thing that makes this a little bit of a challenge with Levelhead is we have two big game systems that make this tricky. One is switches and the other is paths. So paths are simply you lay down sort of like a track, and then you put stuff on the track, and then it moves around. So it's like moving platforms. You can put cannons on these things and have cannons that roam around the level.
Saw blades. Flying enemies.
Yeah, but you can slap some enemies onto the paths. You can even put coins and power-ups on them, so you can have like a level where, you know, there's a power-up that just is like moving across the level, and people have to try to like chase it and get it.
Yep.
So there's all kinds of stuff that you can do. But that means that, but a path can extend far beyond the boundaries of your screen. And so we have to manage the things on that path and make sure that if you leave and come back, that they have appropriately moved, you know, their normal distance. And then we've got these switches where you can hook a lever to a door or to a cannon or all kinds of things. And if you flip that switch, if the door or whatever it's pointing at is way far away, then it doesn't exist because we haven't spawned it, but it still needs to open.
Still needs to know.
Yeah. And we have portals where you can jump into a portal and then that teleports you somewhere else in the level. Well, what if the destination portal doesn't exist?
What if you still got to go there? What if it doesn't exist and is on a moving platform that also doesn't exist?
Yes, because you can put a portal on a path.
Yeah.
You know? So we need to have a non-existent path, move a non-existent portal so that when you jump into the entry point, you emerge in the right place. So there's all these interesting sort of problems where each sort of element that you can put into the level has its own set of constraints as far as how this has to be managed. And so what this has basically meant for me is that I've had to rebuild most of the aspects of level head that are all about position and stuff and managing states of things like levers and switches. So that for the most part, the level itself is just a bunch of sort of persistent data that's stored behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And then what you're actually looking at in the level is just those are items that don't actually do anything. And instead, they're just a visual representation of this data behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So a lever, for example, has no concept of whether it is on or off or anything like that. Instead, it just looks sort of into the ether. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if a lever were here, what would it look like? And then it just makes itself look like that.
Yeah. And this is kind of fun because this is kind of the model view controller, the MVC model of software development. But the fun thing about it, so for any of you who are sort of comp sci people, but the fun thing about this is that, you know, Seth didn't even know what that was, but then he had to come up with that solution in order to solve this optimization problem. And it's a thing we talk about a lot about, you know, learning through school versus learning by doing, is that you stumble across many of the same solutions that other people, you know, are being taught in some sort of way. But I remember learning about like model view controller at some point in the past. And at the time, just thinking like, why would I do something this complicated?
You know, right.
Like, why wouldn't I just have these all be the same thing?
And then here we are working on a game where it's like, this is the obvious thing to do.
And so there's something to be said for solving the problem when you need to solve it, you know, instead of using these, you know, established best practices for how to write your code and how to write object oriented programs for various sort of structural reasons. Those are all really great and really useful, and they're there for a reason. But if you don't know the reason, it's very hard to learn it and very hard to program that way.
Yeah, which I think this may be a weird opinion, but I think it's crazy that there are entire classes in comp sci that are algorithms classes.
Yeah.
To me, that would be like, you know, if you're taking an engineering class and you're like, this is wrenches. Okay. So we're going to show you all the different sizes of wrenches that there are, right? And then when you go to actually build something, you're like, you just look at the fucking bolt and you're like, well, I need a wrench that's that size. And then you just go get it. Right. Mm-hmm. So why would you spend so much time trying to memorize all these different tools? I mean, I think maybe it's because it like plants a seed. So you have like a vague sense of like what to reach for.
Yeah. I think it's very helpful because I spent some time doing some algorithm study at my very beginning of learning programming. And that has been very helpful, you know, ever since, kind of moving forward.
I bet if you went back now, it would be far more useful.
Oh yeah, it'd be far more useful. Yeah. So I think the order is important. And I would never say that I think that algorithms aren't a super useful thing to learn.
Oh yeah.
But I think they're definitely everything's being just taught in the wrong
way. Everything in comp sci, they start with the hardest stuff.
Yeah. It's not even the hardest of it. They provide no context.
Yeah.
You know, they're just like, here's the right way to think about programming. Here's the right way to do all of this stuff. But the right way doesn't matter if you've never done it before.
Well, not only that, but that's just bullshit anyways.
Yeah, yeah, the right way is the right way that works.
The right way, yeah. Programming is a problem-solving tool, and the right way to program something is whatever gets the solution.
Yep.
So, that's, you know, it's just the way it is. All right, so then, so that's kind of where Levelhead is, which is, it's a pretty fun project. It's definitely a big one.
Yeah.
And so, I'm doing this whole thing on its own branch, and I'm going to try to get it all done, and then just merge the whole thing back in, which is going to be a...
It's going to be a thing.
It's going to be a day. Otherwise, industry news, Discord. Discord is now Steam.
Discord is Steam. Steam is Discord. It's all very confusing.
So last week, I think it was last week, we talked about Valve redoing their chat.
Finally upgraded their chat client.
And they just said, we like what Discord's doing. We'll just take that. Yeah. So Valve redid their chat client, made it look like Discord. Discord, just over, I think on Friday or something like that.
Yeah, I was just seeing it last week.
They revealed a patch where they added a games tab to the Discord client, where now you click on that, and because Discord can talk to the games that you're playing, so you'll see in Discord, you know, that somebody's playing Fortnite, and somebody's playing World of Warcraft, mm-hmm. and whatever. So you go to the games tab, and now you can look not at people, but look at games. And then you can see, oh, like, which one of your friends have been playing this game, which mm-hmm. of your friends have been playing this game. And so, and you can even launch games through that interface. And we're like, oh, my God.
And you launch them through Steam through that interface.
Yeah.
So it kind of sits on top of the whole.
So quite a long time ago, we were talking about Bscotch ID as we were originally developing it. And we were like, you know, if we wanted to, we could really take this thing in a very different direction mm-hmm. where we could take, instead of having Bscotch ID be sort of our own thing, we could develop it as a standalone platform that connects all your games together and stuff like that, and then allow other developers to use it. And then it would be this kind of social platform that could exist on top of all the other platforms, yeah. right? So it would work on iOS, it would work on Android, it would work on desktop, you know, it wouldn't matter. And it would just be like a layer of services that you would normally use Google Play game services or, you know, all these other, or Steam or those kinds yeah. of things. So it would kind of supersede all those. But then we thought that sounds not like what we want to do just because yeah. we want to focus more on making games.
Yeah. Basically it completely takes game making out of the
yeah. whole but thing. There was a short time period where we were seriously talking about taking Bscotch ID in that direction. In other words, a platform to sit on top of all other platforms.
Yep.
And we are convinced that this is what Discord is doing.
Well, we're suspicious.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Where
it definitely looks like they're... Because the question, you know, so Discord, if any of you aren't using Discord, you should be. If you're using Slack, just get off it.
Get off of there.
Just get off it. Get
even though, Discord. You know, Discord is gaming focused, but it still has far better usability and features than Slack does.
Yeah. So. Or at minimum, the same ones, yeah. you know? So it's way, way easier to get into and to manage. And so... I know for me, anytime I need to join a Slack group or something, I just don't.
Yeah.
I'm in like 3 Slack groups and I don't ever go into any of them because I just forget that they exist because getting into them is such a laborious process.
And you got to manually type in the yep. URL yeah. for that specific Slack group.
Yep. And it's just over complicated. But yeah, so
what is this, the 90s?
Discord, right. But Discord came out, what, I guess 3 years ago now. So it hasn't been out very long at all. And it came out to solve this problem, which was that in the video games chatting space, there were a few competitors, but they were all difficult and confusing as fuck to use.
And they typically were voice only.
They were voice only, and they weren't. And I think they were almost all paid, or at least
usually you would pay for the server, and then people could join the server for free. So
right,
yeah.
So there was no kind of just centralized,
and you have to like type in IP addresses. And,
yeah, it was just complicated.
Yeah.
So Discord came in and was just like, "We'll do this better." And they did, but there's been this question the entire time that I've been asking, which is why, right? What's the end game that yeah. Discord has? Because everything is completely free. They do have this, you know, they have the Nitro version or whatever that you can pay $40 a year or something like that. And, but the perks that you get are very minimal. So there's no like pressure really. I did it cause I love Discord and I want to support it, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't actually make use of any of the things that I spent my $40 for it.
Yeah.
So there's definitely no pressure on your average user to spend any money. And if anything, there's pressure to not at the moment. And so because of that, and because they just made a better product than anybody else had for that purpose, their user base is now, what did they say it was? It was something stupid.
I think they've probably surpassed 100 million.
It's something yeah. like that after only 3 years, right?
Yeah.
So they got this huge user base.
What are you going to do with them?
What are they going to do with them?
What they're going to do is they're going to open a store. I'm convinced.
I think they're going to open a store.
I'm convinced they're going to start distributing games because they so the direction that Valve came at it from, as well as iTunes and Google Play and whatever, mm-hmm. every one of the major players in the market just said, we're a store.
Yeah.
So we sell games, and that is our number one focus. And so if you look at the kinds of things that they do for patching their storefront, it's simply about discoverability and like, oh, there's new search features. We have new ways of featuring games. We have new ways for developers to highlight their games, whatever. But there's nothing on the social side. So for example, yeah. You know, Steam hadn't updated their chat client in I don't know how long.
I don't think they ever updated their chat.
Their voice chat is like you click on a phone button and it kind of is like a Skype call. Yeah,
I only use their voice chat, I think, like in college, like once or twice.
Yeah. But iOS is fairly, I mean, there is no social aspect of that. They have Game Center where you can sort of like, in some games, you can kind of challenge people.
I think that's been pretty much abandoned at this point.
Yeah, I think it's not on their top priority list. Right. And then Google has Google Play Game Services, which they've also kind of talked about as being very low on their priority list, and they've kind of walked away from that as well.
Yep.
So this is weird. We've all kind of felt this is a bit weird because of the fact that games are, you know, they're inherently social. People like to talk about them. They like to spend time with other people who are playing the same games as them. Mm-hmm. And the idea that you would build a storefront and just completely ignore the community aspect of it,
yeah,
is interesting.
Yeah, and Steam has been trying to do stuff because they've had like the curator system they introduced a few years ago, and they've been doing some stuff kind of leaning that direction, but it hasn't been as sort of a.
It's always been in the area of selling more games, not necessarily in just getting people excited about stuff. Right. Which of course, in the end, leads to sales, but it's a longer term thing. So I think what we're going to see is over the next few years, Discord is coming at it from the other direction. They're building a social community around video games.
Yep.
And then they'll be able to harness that community.
Right, 'cause I mean, they're already the go-to. And then Twitch is that new weird platform that people are somehow selling games through and all that, right? And the chat client in Twitch was also not very good for that purpose. So like you get 100,000 people in a stream and now all of a sudden the chat client is completely useless, right? And so Discord's already become sort of the de facto replacement for that. So Discord is just everywhere. It's now embedded
it's integrated
in
everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just kind of in every network that exists, just sitting on top, just accumulating all these users.
It's just a harmless chat client.
Yeah.
Oh no. This thing, I am convinced that there's going to be, at the very least, a desktop store.
Yeah.
Because I think, and they're also right in that if you look at every other store that has tried to compete with Steam, they started as a store.
Yeah, they can't compete.
You can't compete.
I think the newest one, I guess, is Cartridge from Kongregate, right? Which actually does say like it's got a social focus first. But the problem is,
it's still a store first.
It's still a store first, and their user base is a user base built on free games. There's completely free web games.
Yeah, right? so that's gonna be a different thing. Yeah, but at Discord, they're just like, we're just gonna focus on community, build up a huge user base, and then you've got them there. And then you can start distributing games through there.
Friends are already there because you've brought them in from all of your other platforms. Yeah.
And I mean, like Discord has Spotify integration. It has integration with all kinds of things. Like, can you imagine having that on your Steam? Like, none of these things are there. Right.
It's kind of interesting, this sort of new future of things being way more cross-platform than they used to be. Because like the fact that Discord, it just reaches its little tentacles into everything. You know, it's like, because you can hook up your Skype to it, you can hook up your Steam to it, you can hook up Blizzard to it, you can hook up anything to it.
Yeah.
Get your friends into there and all that kind of stuff. It can see all the games that you're playing. So it's just kind of doing all that stuff. And at the same time, all these other companies, you know, Sony being the one that people are making fun of right now, are just staying locked down, you know, and they're saying like, no, if you have friends in here, you can't take those friends with you elsewhere, right? These are our friends.
Yeah. I think whoever belligerently holds on to their own walled garden the hardest is going to get hit the hardest.
Yeah.
When somebody, like, it might not be Discord, but somebody's going to come in and just change the game.
Change everything.
So we have an air table called B-Scotch Stradamus.
Mm-hmm. Or B-Scotch Stradamus? I don't know how you would say it.
But we... So whenever we make a prediction about something that's going to happen, we put it in there and then we have it so that it'll email us on the date, by the date that we predicted, so we can see whether or not we were right about the thing. Because, you know, it's really easy to be sort of like the armchair quarterback, just be like, here's what I think's going to happen.
Yep.
And then never actually reflect and see
if you
were
right.
Have
any skin in the game, you know?
So we have no skin. Yeah, we're just throwing random shit out there. And if we're right or wrong, who cares? It doesn't matter. But I still am convinced.
So Discord's backed by a lot of venture capital. Like they've raised something like $30 million, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what they've told those people besides just, we've got a fuck ton of users, right?
Which is enough to get a lot of money.
It's a classic.
Twitter. Twitter has never been profitable.
Yeah.
And they're now publicly traded and you can buy shares for, I don't know, $20 a share. It has never made a positive return.
Yep.
In like a decade.
Right.
But they got a lot of users, so it's worth something.
And that's true. Is if you look at a case like Twitter, they never actually became something else, right? They're still just a platform where you tweet and then they sell advertisements.
Yes.
Which is just such a boring business model.
It's the attention merchant model.
Yeah.
You know?
And I get it. It's the obvious model.
Yeah. We accumulate eyeballs and then we redirect those eyeballs in advertisements.
Yeah.
Bloop.
So the question is, though, is what is Discord going to do? Because they got all these users. There has to be an end game. But what is the end game? Are they going to start selling advertisements too? Because if so, I'm getting the fuck off that platform and we'll be very bummed about it.
I don't think they will.
But I don't think they will either. I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think
they are demonstrating a lot of insight.
Yeah.
I think they understand where that would go.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. I think it's going to be something.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be the first store to come out where we'll actually think, okay, maybe we should get in on this.
Yes. You know? Yeah.
Because all the others, we've gotten in on some of them and it's not panned out. And all the others just, don't even look promising out of the gate. But yeah. I think this will be the one. We'll see.
Yeah. Although we are now launching Crashins on EA Origin.
Oh, that's true.
Which we're pretty excited about.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
So we have no.
Is that live now? That must be live.
I think
now.
It's live-ish. Like they have multiple layers. So they have a subscription thing and then they have a purchase thing. Crashlands is coming out kind of in phases on that platform. Okay. Just over a couple of weeks though.
Yeah.
And so we're pretty pumped about that. I have no idea what to expect. Cause in all cases you never really get like numbers. And now even on Steam, you don't get numbers because Steam Spy is gone.
Well, we get our own numbers though.
We get our own numbers, but we can't see what we might expect based on a performance of other games. So, it's been very great actually working with them. So it's been very smooth.
We all hear horror stories about EA. So, when we first started to talk to them, we were like, oh no, what's going to happen? And it was all great.
No, it was great. Yeah. They were just very friendly and very supportive and they just gave us exactly what we needed. So we're like, fuck yeah, this is how business should be done. So that was super cool. And then last bit of news, I floated.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a thing in St. Louis called Float STL or something like that. Where you go into a sensory deprivation chamber and you float in this salt water and you're just in there for an hour and a half. So the water is 94.5 degrees, which is about the temperature of the surface of your skin. Mm-hmm. And so is the air. So you feel there's no air circulation. The water is totally still. And I have to say, for starters, the buoyancy thing freaked me the fuck out because
it's super salty water, right?
It is. I didn't like get it in my mouth or anything, which would have been pretty bad. But I always hear about people talking about like the Great Salt Lakes, and they're like, oh yeah, it's crazy.
Or was it the Dead Sea? Is that the one that's basically just pure salt?
Yeah. It's like you just get in there and you just float, And I think intellectually you understand like, oh, I will float. Right. Yeah. But it's such an alien feeling. Cause like most of us have spent some time in water and you know what to expect is how it feels. Yeah. Right. And like when I got in that tank, it was weird that I had to like apply pressure to push my arm down into the water because if I didn't, then it would just pop right back up to the top again. Like I felt like I was a life jacket, which was fucking weird.
Huh.
So then the other thing is, you ever see videos of astronauts and they always kind of look like they're shrugging a little bit, like their necks kind of are shorter? So
I hadn't noticed that.
Next time you see any like interviews with astronauts on the space station, notice A, what they're doing with their hands, and B, that their shoulders are weirdly higher than normal. It's because gravity is normally pulling your shoulders down. But once you don't have that, then your neck muscles kind of like pull your shoulders up.
That makes sense.
So you kind of have this like uncomfortable shrug. And then you got to be like, what the fuck do I do with my hands? Because normally gravity just pulls them down and then there they are.
There. Yeah.
Well, if they're just floating, then you gotta consciously do something. Like you gotta make a decision about where they're gonna be. It's so
it's kind of like giving a talk, you know? Where,
yeah.
What do I do?
Your
hands gotta be.
What do I do with my hands? Yeah. So I ended up the first 10 minutes I had to figure out like what the fuck do I do? Like maybe I put them up here, like way over my head. Maybe that's fine. Or maybe and I ended up in sort of like a mummy, kind of like a crossed on the chest pose, because that also kind of pulled my shoulders down, and then my neck didn't hurt. So the idea behind these tanks is you go in there, you're wearing earplugs, so all you can hear is your own breathing, basically. And it's completely black, no light at all. No sound, no light. You feel nothing on your skin. You don't even feel the pull of gravity. And then you're just in there for a while. And the idea is to allow yourself to kind of like turn inward mentally and just experience your own thoughts in kind of an uninterrupted kind of a way. So some people report seeing hallucinations when they're in there or seeing weird movements of color, because even when your eyes are open, you see absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. So since there's no sensory input for your eyes, then for some people, their brain will kind of
just make things
like, there's gotta be something here. I'm going to fill in these blanks, you know? Because that is something that your brain does a lot, where it fills in the gaps on your vision stuff.
I mean, most of what you experience is just stuff your brain's making up.
Yeah. So your brain is very good at making up eyeball stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So my experience was there were two things. One I'll talk about, which was actually in the tank, which was I was able all of a sudden to remember. I kind of like walked backwards through my life, and I was able to just very easily remember all kinds of things that I hadn't been able to remember or hadn't even thought of in like 20 years. Like I was remembering names and faces of like kids I went to kindergarten with who then moved away. And I wasn't even friends with them at that time. And they were just acquaintances. And then they left. And I hadn't been able to recall them at all. And then all of a sudden I get in this tank and then I can just conjure them up. And I could see them vividly. Like I could see what they looked like and stuff. So that was kind of weird. I don't know. Something about just being in there made it really easy to just kind of sift back through at least what I believe my memories are. Because memories right. are, of course,
or manufacture them. Yeah. But in any event,
yeah.
But I mean, I imagine the cost of sensory input is very, very high. You know, the cost to your brain. So if you just turn all that shit off,
then your brain is like, okay, cool. I can redirect.
You got all this processing
all my resources.
Power, yeah. You just got spare power now.
Yeah. So I think it's the kind of thing that I would definitely encourage everyone to try. I think it costs kind of similar to like a 60-minute massage kind of a thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So you're talking like the $50 to $80 kind of range, you know, for an hour, hour and a half. But yeah, it's a fascinating experience. And then also, all right. So as a sort of an aside to this experience, I went in there and we were sitting in the waiting room area. And I was like, this is really nice because it's like a spa. You know, they've got the nice chairs. They've got tea out. They've got like nice lighting. They've got sort of chill music, you know, and there's, of course, no TVs.
Yes.
You know, there's nothing there to kind of like pull you out of the moment. I was sitting there and I thought, how come we only have this kind of a place in spas?
Yeah.
That's kind of fucking weird.
It's the only place that smells really good.
Yeah. Like the whole place is just designed to just make you relaxed and just not worry about stuff, you know? And I thought, I want to make one of these. Like I want to make this experience. And so here's the thing. The studio has moved out of my basement.
Are you going to make a basement spa?
I have a walk-in closet that used to house all of our mugs. Now it's empty. And it's big enough that I can put a really comfortable chair in there, a side lamp, and a small table with like an essential oil diffuser and a little Bluetooth speaker and like play some chill ass music.
Mm-hmm.
And I ordered a bunch
I assume.
Yeah. And I ordered a bunch of sound dampening foam panels that I'm going to put on the walls in the closet so that when you go in there, it's just like super quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to make a closet spa. Nice.
That's going to be awesome.
I think I could do it for probably like under $200.
Yeah.
Because I could just get like a cheap chair off of Craigslist. I'm basically prototyping this.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I thought, why is this not a thing? You know, and I think it's just because of space, because people can appreciate the experience when they're there.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't appreciate it enough to sort of set aside an area of their house for that kind of like quiet meditation or just like sitting there thinking about stuff, you know?
Yeah. Well, this is something that my wife and I found really interesting when we were setting up our new place, which was sort of the customs of the kinds of things you're supposed to do with rooms as a homeowner.
Yeah, you got to have a living room.
You got to have all these particular kinds of
rooms. You got to have that room with the TV in it.
Right. And
pool table.
But then also you have to have a guest bedroom, right?
Yeah.
And I was thinking back and I was like, we basically never have guests over that spend the night.
Yeah,
you got to do it on rare occasion, right? But it's literally like a few times a year max.
You got a whole chunk of your house that's not even for you.
That's crazy, you know? Like, so it's basically this unused part of your house. And you know, assuming that you do have a guest bedroom,
go get a hotel, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Come on. Right?
Cause you know, we're
get out of my house, guests.
Right. Cause you know, and it's great to have people over to hang out and do all this kind of stuff. But that added layer of people spending the night, it actually adds an enormous space and sort of planning burden. We just didn't do it because we were like, why, you know, just why,
right.
Why use the space in that way?
It's your space.
Yeah, but there must be some sort of parts of a house that are just being used in ways that just don't make any sense, especially storing shit you don't need.
Yep.
And then just being there on the off chance that this rare event happens. Like if you have spaces that are for those two reasons, what if you just didn't, you know? And what if you turned those into a little in-house spa?
Yeah. Like spa closet. You got a closet there. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe rethink your rooms. I'm gonna try this. I'm gonna report back. It's gonna take me a couple weeks to accumulate the materials and get everything set up. But if it works well, then I'm gonna see what the price would be to do sort of a build out where, because right now it's still a closet, It's got some shelves and stuff in there, you know, whatever. So I would want to like paint the walls like a nice. Right now it's just like white wall. We didn't paint it because we're like it's a closet. You're never gonna go in there. But then of course
it begs the
question. Yeah, it begs the question of like, why do you have a room that you never go in?
What's its purpose?
Because a walk-in closet is a room. It's just a small room.
Yeah.
You know? You don't have to fill it with clothes. You could turn it into a spa.
True. Yeah, I wouldn't be able to do it in our house because our house is it's one of those really old ones. It has no closets to speak of.
Oh, yeah. It was built in a time when people didn't own things.
Yeah, because it was really expensive to own stuff. And they were like, why would we?
Why would we own those things?
We can't.
And now we have Amazon.
Now we can own infinite
things. You can have everything for $8.
Yeah.
So the world is different now. And now we have walk-in closets that need to be turned into spas.
It is pretty hilarious though, that we just have part, like we build this beautiful space for ourselves and this the place we call home, you know? And then we're just like, you know what we should do with a whole bunch of this space?
Just fill it with shit.
Fill it with shit we don't actually use. You know, let's pile it in some places, just like floor to ceiling, just garbage.
Yeah, and we gotta take out a loan to live in this house because we don't have any money left because of all that shit that we gotta store in the house. It's a bit circular.
Yeah, maybe don't.
Maybe don't do any of that shit. Yeah. All right, let's get on to some questions. These questions come from our listeners over at podcast.bscotch.net. If you would like to get your question onto a future episode, get over there, put your question in the text box, and don't forget to submit it. You can't just type it.
No,
that wouldn't get over here.
Yeah, we're not watching your normal keystrokes because you know we're not some of those other companies.
Yeah, we're totally not logging your keystrokes at all.
Nope,
or anything
not
like
even
that.
A little bit.
Yeah,
and actually on that note, not the key logging thing, but on the podcast.bscotch.net note, it's possible that we will be prioritizing making a new podcast.
Is it probable? System. I mean, it's always been possible.
It's I don't know, actually, because it still depends on like what everybody agrees is sort of top priority.
Hey, you know what, though? They're not here right now, so it's up to us.
That's true. So it might be that for the next week until Sam gets back. Then the new podcast system will become sort of top priority.
And then Sam will come back and he'll say, hey, get back to work. I'm like, shit. He caught us.
It's possible.
It's possible.
So anyway, I'm really hoping to get this thing replaced because I hate it.
Yeah, the podcast page, it did its job quite well at the beginning. When we had 33 listeners and we were recording the podcast from under bed sheets.
Yeah. It reflects those days.
It was very appropriately constructed for those times.
Yeah.
So we'll have some updates on that, I'm sure. All right. So first question comes from My Secret Weapon. I'm participating in a game jam at the end of June. I've done one before, but I'm bringing two guys who haven't. One is a new artist. One is a new programmer. This is their first jam and first game. I've done all aspects of dev solo for years. What's the best way to split the workload between the three of us?
I'm kind of curious what new artist and new programmer mean.
New to games?
Freshly born, you know, like just came into the world knowing how to do these things or new to
game
jams?
They're babies. It's a new programmer and they just had twins.
Uh-huh.
So they've got a new artist and a new programmer.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's time to get them into the business, the family business.
I think the best advice is to, actually, not the best advice. It's a crazy thing to say. I think some advice.
Here's some advice.
would be to
that
not,
might be bad or that, good.
Yeah, it just is what it is. Would be to sort of recognize the position that you're taking on here as sort of
you're
the old person, right?
You're the Gandalf.
Yeah. And so, and these other people are new, like, and remember—
They're the Frodo and the Samwise.
Right. But remember that there's nothing like the experience of a first jam, right?
Yeah.
You can only do it once, just by definition. And it is way more important that those other two people have a great experience than that the three of you make a great game.
Yeah. So I think the best thing is to put just a tremendous amount of pressure on yourself.
Exactly.
To make this perfect for them.
But
and if it's not absolutely perfect, the whole thing's ruined.
Right, which is, of course, not even remotely what I'm saying. but I'm saying don't make it about the game because it's very easy to be in this position. And because you are the person who knows how to do this and, you know, now you're going to take it on yourself to be in charge of the game, in charge of the game design, in charge of everything because you'll know all the things that you shouldn't do and all this kind of stuff.
But you want to take your hands off. Let them do stuff.
Yeah. Let them contribute as much as possible. And even if you think things probably aren't going to work out that well, it's of course fine to say that and to kind of dig into stuff. But just be a little more flexible than you otherwise might.
You want to be a guiding hand and actually, don't pull your weight too hard.
Yeah.
Let them do some stuff.
Yeah.
Because, if you can do, and this was actually a struggle that we had early because I had been doing solo dev for a long time and Sam was a new artist.
Yep.
And there was a long time period where Sam was catching up to my art skills. Mm-hmm. And that was very difficult for him emotionally because he always knew that whatever he was working on, I could have also done it.
Yeah.
Faster or at the same quality or whatever. And so there's that, like, what am I bringing to the table kind of a thing. And so he's far surpassed me.
If you're looking back through our history, it's basically like Towel Fight was the game where that was true.
That was right? Where like that our worst looking game is about my level of art.
Right. And so for Towel Fight, either of the two of them could have done the art.
Yeah.
And it was in Quadrupus where Sam took over and actually had practiced enough that he, you know, just got further ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. So just kind of understand understand the implications of being the person who knows how to do lots of stuff and try to find ways to kind of mitigate the emotional toll that mm-hmm. might take on everybody else.
Right. It doesn't mean you should be telling everybody else what to do. It means you're there to help, to guide.
Yeah, let them flail a lot.
Yeah.
And then just occasionally hop in and be like, boop, and just kind of poke right. them in the right, nudge them in the right direction.
Right. But yeah, it is really important that people for the first jam get to experience the full thing of just like, brainstorming together and like being in the trenches together and doing all that kind of stuff. If people are just being told what to do, and this is true. This is also why one of the reasons we advise against having a game designer on a jam team because all their job is just to tell everybody else what to do.
Yeah.
Which just sucks for everybody.
Right. So as a programmer on a jam team, do you want to just show up and be given an assignment or do you want to actually be part of the design process and get your creative input in there, which I think that's what people tend to prefer.
Way more fun.
And then you have some sense of ownership because stuff that you're programming is also stuff that you helped to conceive of. So just be a little hands off as hard as it will be to kind of.
And that may mean, I mean, you never know what the outcome is going to be because it depends on the people and the project. It may mean that you end up with the worst game at the end.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you will. Okay with that.
The point is not to make a perfect or even good game.
No.
It's just to make a game.
Just to make a game and have a really good, impactful time doing it.
Yeah. So also bring snacks.
Yeah.
You can sort of be the point person for keeping everybody, you know, hydrated and well
snacked
fed.
Up.
All right. Next question comes from Zacy, who says, "Hey dudes, you talk about how great it is to organize your thoughts onto some paper, but how do I turn my empty page into thoughts? Also, thanks for having a profound impact on my ear holes." So I think one thing is you should not impact ear holes.
No. Profoundly or otherwise. You should leave them alone. Although Q-tips, I mean, despite what the Q-tip box says, which is like, don't put these in your ear holes.
But don't impact your ear holes with them. Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure that's what
you can
for,
put though. Them in there gently.
I'm pretty sure they even tell you not to do that.
They specifically tell you not to.
Yeah, they're like, don't even do this
gently.
And
we, of course, legally probably should also tell you never put Q-tips in your ears.
Yeah, don't, obviously.
Ever.
But when you do it, it's probably fine.
It's probably fine. all right, how do you turn your empty page into thoughts? You quit thinking about it so hard.
Yeah, here's what back when I had to write things for some purpose, where I'd be like, you got to write a lab report or write a essay or whatever. The first, I would sit down with my empty page and I would just literally just start typing. I would go full brain dump, not even trying to write the thing I was supposed to be writing, because the idea was warm up my fingers to get some typing in, but also just start getting into this zone of thinking about writing and not giving a fuck about what I was writing.
This is a bias toward action.
Yeah.
You just gotta start doing shit.
Yeah. And then after maybe like a third of a page or something of just like writing random shit, then I would just be like, okay, I'm ready. And then I would just control all delete and then start writing for real. And that turns out to be a very effective way just to kind of grease the wheels.
Control A delete.
What did I say?
I think you said control Alt delete.
Control.
You don't want to shut down your word processor.
No.
You want to keep typing. Select all and delete it all.
Select all and delete it all.
Yeah. I mean, it's people get really hung up on doing things right.
Yeah. Don't
fucking worry about it. Especially something that's just for you to see. You already are thinking. So just take the words and just put them on the paper. Even if the words are, I don't fucking know what to write about. Like
those are often my first words.
Yeah. This is stupid. I can't even believe I'm sitting here typing this thing.
Yeah. And if you're writing on just real physical paper with your physical hand, the same rules apply.
Sometimes I just write about how much my hand hurts from holding that fucking pen
I've mentioned before that I was doing a sort of pen pal thing with a buddy from college.
I think
a
little while ago.
Yeah, I talked about that on the podcast. And a non-insubstantial fraction of every letter I wrote was just me complaining about how much my hand hurt while I was writing this note. You know, part of that was I needed to fill up a couple pages of just like writing some thoughts down.
Let me describe to you all the ways in which my hand.
Exactly. Well, because that's what I was thinking about at the time. So just embracing that fact and just writing about it is fine. So when you're sitting down to process your own thoughts, don't select which thoughts you're going to process. That kind of defeats the whole point. Just sit
bias
down.
Bias toward action.
Bias toward action. Just start writing whatever you're thinking. And then as that goes, you can start to refine it over time as you get lower down the page into the things you really wanted to dig into.
Yes. And I've also found that the bias toward action approach, I feel like game jams sort of epitomize this idea where you don't have time to think about shit. You just got to start moving in a game jam. And anytime we've done one, I always find that for the next, you know, at least a few weeks, I'm just faster at everything that I do because I'm just not worrying about things as much. And I'm not thinking about things so damn hard. It's a hard thing to maintain because I think as a person, you just naturally trend toward wanting to do things well and getting kind of worried about the quality of what you're delivering, even if you're just delivering it to yourself, you know? So it's a good habit to kind of practice of that. Just like, just do stuff. Just put the pen on the paper.
Yeah. Just decide what parts need to be done well. And for me, it's basically gotta have good grammar.
Yeah. Well, and that's also
like when I'm writing shit, no matter what it is, good grammar. That's my only rule of things that have to just always be good. After that, though, it can just be the worst shit anyone has ever written. That's fine.
The dirt's the limit.
Dirt isn't even.
I was
going to
say sky, but it's like it's down because it's who gives a shit how bad it is.
But the dirt's just the top, though. So you can keep on going.
The core of the earth.
Core of the earth is the limit. you can keep on going through that. End up in space on the other side.
That's a real shitty piece of writing right there.
But then it's still fun.
It's so bad it punches a hole through the earth.
Yeah.
Next question comes from Fascinator. It's a pretty good name.
It is.
One who fascinates.
It's kind of presumptuous, though.
Well, you know, it's in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah.
You know. Are all free-to-play games bad, or is it just the ones that use greasy tactics to get you in? Like in Fortnite, it's only the Battle Royale portion that is free. But in the Battle Royale portion, they sell you fuck tons of loot boxes. Right. Okay, so...
I mean, the answer is no.
No, I mean, yeah, you can't just say that all of something is bad.
Yeah.
I think... And it also depends on the user, right?
Yeah.
So there are people who can play a free-to-play game and not spend any money. I mean, that is most people. That is like 98 to 99% of people.
Yep. Right?
So I think it can be done well. The problem is what it trends toward, which is there's basically two sort of logical endpoints of free-to-play. One is the attention merchant model, where you get tons of users and then you just throw a shit ton of advertisements at them.
Yep.
Which I think in general is...
I think it's bad.
In general, it's just a toxic thing. It's not good for people
to
have an ad thrown at them every 30 seconds. It's just a sort of a fact. I think we can all agree that it just kind of fucks people up.
It's not good.
In bad ways. And it also diminishes their relationship with the product. Right.
Yeah.
Because they're getting the product for free. They have
no investment.
They're not emotionally invested in the gameplay experience, and it just becomes.
And then you keep on reminding them of the rest of the world with, in particular, things they don't give a shit about because that's what ads are for.
Yeah. And it also, of course, pushes companies to really lean hard on this concept of engagement, where they're like,
yep.
they want to produce compulsive behaviors to get users to come back into their app day after day after day after day. Not because it's good for the player, and not because it's good for the game, but because then they can show them more ads.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. And so, you know, we've talked in the past about how with Crashlands and even with our other games as well, if somebody opens the game and then plays it for an afternoon and then never opens it again, that's fine by us. Like, we kind of like it if they finish the game.
Yeah.
But also, we don't really care that much because... They are in control of their own destiny and they can do whatever they want. And this is also why we pulled all the ads out of our existing games. Cause we think it's bad. We did it cause we felt that we had to pay the bills, which was true, until Crashlands came out. But once we had the option, we just cut it off.
Yeah. There's one huge advantage of, you know, Rumpus and Beastcatcher ID as well, which is that somebody can buy a game that we put out, log into it, do all the stuff, and then stop playing it a week later. And then we can just never interact with them again for like 2 years. And then we can launch another game and just tell them that we did that.
Yep.
And so if they have any memory whatsoever of having played that game 2 years ago and have any fondness towards that, then basically that relationship that we want from them, which is to have them play our games, is still intact without us having to badger them and advertise to them and send notifications and do all this other stuff.
Yeah, we also don't do push notifications, which again, that's one of those engagement devices where you know, try to hook people back in. And it's something that I noticed, you know, anytime I download a new game, it happens often with paid games as well, even, where start playing the game, I'm like, oh, it's pretty fun. And then I close the game. And then within an hour, I have a push notification.
Yeah. Reminding you to come back and play it again.
Yeah. I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
I don't want to.
I'm all off by default to,
yeah.
Yeah. Still, so I'll never forget the first and only time, I saw an out of app full page ad on my phone.
Yeah.
I was literally enraged. I was so angry at the invasiveness of that experience. Cause of course, like, I hate advertising more than I hate almost anything. And I very carefully and studiously avoid it in kind of all aspects of my life. And just to have somebody be like, you know what? You're not even in this right now. Like, we're outside of this transaction where, like, you give us some of your attention. We let you participate in this thing that we made. They're like, we were out of that ecosystem now, and they still did it.
Yep.
It was just such a violation.
Yep.
I was so angry. I deleted every app that I downloaded like for weeks because I didn't know which one it was.
I didn't even want to look.
I didn't even care. I was just like, fuck all of these. Like, full 24/7 purge.
Yep. So that's one side of free to play.
Yeah.
Is using the attention merchant concept. And the other is the in-app purchase thing, which it can be done what I would call ethically, I guess, where there is a cap on spending and users are buying known outcomes. So something like Super Mario Run,
yep.
Right? Where they say, hey, you've You've experienced the first part of the game, and now you can buy the remainder of the game. So you basically played the demo. Now you can unlock the full version.
Or like level packs and that kind of thing.
Problem is, there's a thing called miswanting, where people don't actually recognize, they don't actually desire things that are good for them, and they want things that are generally bad for them, right? Like people don't want to go to the gym, and they want to eat fuckloads of ice cream. Like those are, these are both miswanting things, because if you did the opposite of both of those, you'd be very happy, or at least in very good shape.
Very good shape.
And you might be happy about that fact.
I thought miswanting was more about the outcome. Like you thought that a thing would have a particular outcome, and that's why you have it.
Miswanting is where you want something to occur because you have a certain belief about how it's going to affect you. And then it affects you in the opposite way.
Okay. So this is like with ice cream. I'm just a little unclear on this now because I felt like I knew what it meant until you used ice cream.
So miswanting would be like, so there's been research about how people view their happiness while they're at work versus when they're at home.
Right.
Right. And so there was a study where they hooked pagers to people and they just would randomly go off during the day, and people had just filled out a survey about like, what are you doing right now? And how do you feel? And they had several thousand participants in this study. So the questions were, what are you doing right now? How do you feel? And what would you like to be doing right now? What they found was that people were the happiest when they were at work. And what they overwhelmingly wanted to be doing was not be at work.
Yeah. Right.
And then when they were at home, they reported that they were less happy, but they reported wanting to stay at home and not go to work.
Right.
And so people tend to misidentify what it is that brings sort of longer term satisfaction and happiness in their lives. And they go after,
well, this is, in this case, it's not even longer term. This is just like
even just
your actual
in the
experience
moment.
Right now.
So this is where stuff like ice cream, you know, where you want ice cream because you think it's going to make you happy. Right.
Yeah.
And it does like right there in the moment, but then,
if you're most adults, you're going to feel like shit immediately.
Feel like shit immediately afterwards. And then in the longer term, you're like,
I just don't like how
I feel right now or ever now.
Yeah.
So that's kind of that miswanting idea.
I see.
Yeah. So we see this as well, where people hate having advertisements thrown at them and they hate being nickel and dimed all day long by games that are just riddled with in-app purchases. Then a game like Super Mario Run comes along and they're like, hey, we're going to do the ethical thing. We're just going to sell you the full game. And they just get review bombed into the fucking ground.
Yep.
So they had their review scores looked like a U, where it's like a bunch of 5 stars and then a bunch of 1 stars and almost nothing in the middle, because people were so mad that the game asked them to pay for something.
Yeah.
And they would rather the game just be completely filled with ways to get them addicted to spending on random loot boxes and advertise at them and whatever. Even though, of course, that's far worse for their own personal health and finances
and game experience
in the long run. So that's where that miswanting kind of comes into
that.
So I think it probably can be done well, like in the case of Super Mario Run, but it's the worst business move.
Yeah.
Right. So if you're gonna make a free game and then do it ethically, you just kind of hurt yourself, both in terms of reputation and in terms of financial outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
This is like the only winning move is not to play, right?
Yeah.
So we just stepped out of that.
We're trying to opt out.
Yeah. Still no idea how that's going to work out for us in the long run.
Yeah. Which, I mean, when you're competing against free to play, is a very hard sell. It's like, yeah, you can have all these things for free, or you can just spend some money and be done with it, with our game. But for most people, because they never intended to spend any money anyway.
Yeah.
Which, and it's also important to remember, because it's easy. Sometimes we forget too, when we're looking at the numbers on stuff, you know, that almost nobody who plays your game, especially if it's free to play, nobody plays your game gives a shit at all.
Right.
Almost none of them were ever going to spend money in your game. Almost none of them. Almost none of them, like a good 80% of them, were only going to try it once and then uninstall it and never play it again. Right.
Yeah.
So those really high numbers that we're always looking at were for free to play are really meaningless, you know, because it's
I mean, Quadrupus Rampage had 2.5 million downloads.
Yeah.
And that was enough for only Sam to get paid.
Yep.
I couldn't get paid from that.
And
it was at a level that was low enough that he didn't have to pay income tax on the Sam.
Right.
It was a very small amount of money, you know?
Yeah.
And it wasn't enough to support two people. even at a small amount.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So people get really freaked out about premium games because they're like, you just move so many fewer copies. But it's because the copies that you're selling are to those same kinds of people who are the almost 0% of people who are willing to buy something from you.
Yeah.
It's just that now that's your only audience.
People are focusing on the wrong numbers.
Yeah.
You know, because you want, and we also had this kind of epiphany where as we were going through all of our free-to-play stuff, you know, we get support tickets from players, and there's always that kind of calculus going on where you're like, the average player contributes like 2 cents.
Yeah.
And so if I spend an afternoon helping one person, one player, sort of figure out like some aspect of the game or something like that, then that's just like a guaranteed financial.
If you read one word from their original support request,
then you've lost.
You've already lost.
Yeah. And so it creates this just bad vibe. Like it creates this bad feeling, you know, kind of between the developer and the players. The players feel like they're being taken advantage of. The developers don't want to spend time on the players because each player on average is not contributing very much. It's just not good.
Well, I think it's interesting too, because there's the other side of this whole spectrum in the free-to-play space where people can just spend infinite money on a thing, is that you simultaneously now don't give a shit about most of your customer base because they are just a cost.
They don't give a shit about you.
And they don't give a shit about you.
And they probably uninstalled the game on day one anyway.
Right. But those who are in there are basically, they're just getting something for free, right? Which just makes you feel bad as the person who made it. But then now you have this tiny subset of people who spend a lot of money.
And all you're thinking about is, how do we monetize?
Well, but not even just that. But now, but if you're a decent person, you're thinking like, how do I make sure that this was worth it in some way, right? So if they contact you and they're like, oh, I lost all my stuff, right? Or they're really unhappy about something, but they spent $100.
You're saying like, because you're so grateful that they actually paid for stuff.
Well, now you owe them something, right? Because
they could have had it for free and they didn't.
Yeah, they're one of the few people who truly invested. And this is one of the questions that we have with our free-to-play games, even though they don't allow for much in the way of infinite spending. You know, we had like in Quadrum's Rampage, there's a $20 purchase cap.
Yeah.
And
you spend $20, you have everything.
Right. People have bought it. Not a lot of people, but enough people that now when we have questions like, what if we want to sunset the game or replace it with something else or whatever and sort of just, but make it be a new thing now. If we want to do something like this, that basically is now us. Like, yeah, there's a jillion free-to-play players who now just like don't get it anymore, but that's no skin off our back, right? But now there are all these people, and not very many, but there are some people who have could truly like invested in this thing that we gave them. And so now we're like, well, shit, no, this would feel really bad if we were that person. We're like, oh yeah, I spent $20 on this game. And all of a sudden the developer just said, oh, you can't have this anymore.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it's simultaneously like having this free-to-play group simultaneously creates like both ends of a terrible spectrum where it's the people who don't give a shit at all and the people who you feel like you owe a lot to.
Right.
And it makes it very hard on a developer to make any decisions.
Yeah. And this also is something where we've been trying to figure out what to do with the older games.
Yeah.
And it's a conversation we've kind of had repeatedly in a sense that there's sort of three layers of problems that we still have not quite come to a solution on. The clock is ticking on these.
Oh yeah.
Which is, one is they're all in old Game Maker, in Game Maker 1.4, and we need to migrate them over to the new Game Maker because Game Maker 1.4 is going to be losing its support sometime in the near future, which means like if the next iOS comes out or something like that, the games just won't work anymore. And that means we can't maintain them. We can't keep them alive. The second problem is they make almost no money.
They make no money.
I think
it's fair just to call it no money.
Yeah. I mean, with four of us in the studio, you know, the original four games might bring in enough to like get the four of us lunch a couple times a month. Yeah. And that's about it. So it's that calculus of any time we spend on them,
it's just us
sort of losing money and losing time. Even though we love those games and we know our players like those games, the people who have played them, but it's a big financial problem for us.
Yep.
And then the third piece is the tech debt, where those have all B-Scotch ID in them.
Yeah, which we're trying to get rid of.
Which we're trying to move over to Rumpus. And it on a per game basis, it might take us a month or two to get Rumpus sort of added in there in a way that's compatible with B-Scotch ID, where people can keep their stuff and whatever. Mm-hmm. And again, that's just a loss.
Yeah. Right? And just as a reminder, it's not just the month of
It's also the loss of
it's the loss of a month that we could have used towards Levelhead or towards some future game.
Yeah.
And so it's just enormously costly for us to maintain these things. And I think this is something to keep in mind with free to play or with any game really, but especially with free to play.
This is why you saw with GDPR, a bunch of games just shut down.
Yeah.
Cause like
they blame GDPR, but really it was a good scapegoat. Like that's what I would have done at the time. Had I wanted to just basically like to get rid of Beastcatch RD in that moment. I didn't because that's where all of our users are, right? But if I wanted to, I'd have been like, fuck, perfect. This is the great opportunity for me just to abandon this and say it's somebody else's fault.
Yeah. So we have some ideas about what to do about this, but it's looking more and more like the best solution would be to actually somehow sunset the old games in the sense that they're no longer downloadable on the store. People who have already gotten them will still have them.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And so nobody's going to lose anything that they've already gotten, but we won't be able to get new users into those games. And then try to find some way to sort of bring them up to date, but in a way that they're more standalone, where they no longer would use Beastcatch ID. Instead, they would use Rumpus. They would no longer be filled with in-app purchases. Instead, we would sell them or something like that. Mm-hmm. So basically, like, just do something to kind of bring them into the present of our current studio's capabilities and philosophies.
Well, ideally, invest enough into them and give them a potential business model that could make them viable. Because if we don't, then it's just a straight loss, a huge loss.
Yeah.
But if we can do something to them that makes them like relaunchable, sort of as a new title or whatever.
Some kind of remastering.
Yeah. Then we have an opportunity to probably not make a lot of money off of them, but to at least
break even.
Yeah. With the goal being basically to pay for the cost of actually.
Well, and honestly, it's just that we want to keep those games alive.
Yeah.
And we don't want to have them exist in a way that we feel like they're a problem for us. So we're still kind of working out what the solution might be. And I think the important thing is we currently have no plans of just like abandoning them.
Yeah.
I hope we don't have to do that, but
I mean, I think it's likely that we will in the sort of the support sense, where at some point we are going to have to stop putting out updates. We are going to have to stop providing any kind of support whatsoever.
Right. Cause if we want to move forward on future projects, we don't have infinite resources. So one thing at a time.
Yep. So we'll see.
All right. Well, I think that's all the time we have for this week. We'd like to thank our producer, Fat Bard, for making us sound good. Thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord and forums running. Also, if you'd like to get more involved in the Butterscotch community, you can hop into our Discord server at discord.gg/bscotch and come say hello. Also, if you'd like to adorn your body with Butterscotch merch, you can check out our shop over at shop.bscotch.net. We've got mugs, shirts. We don't have like fine china or anything like that.
No, not yet.
But we do have regular mugs.
Yeah.
With awesome shit on them.
Yep.
So,
which is basically equivalent because of the awesome shit.
Yeah, exactly. Also, if you'd like to send us something, we have a mailbox, which you can find the address for over at mailbox.bscotch.net.
And that has been updated. So if you send us something in the past, go look at that address now.
Yes. And last but not least, if you would like to buy us a cup of coffee, you can do so over at tips.bscotch.net. We've opened up an account on, it's called Coffee.
Ko-fi or something. Yeah.
And so I think it just takes like credit cards, PayPal, normal internet money stuff. So if you like what we're doing here and would like to support us in that way, then feel free to do so. And actually, as of last week, we had a couple people subscribe. You can do like a recurring monthly thing, which we're super pumped about, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, we would love to be able to have it make enough money just to pay our contractors who just like clean up and manage the podcast for us.
Yeah, it does actually.
We don't plan to actually make any money off of it because that's a long stretch between where we are now and where that would have to be. But if we can just kind of offset other people's costs, and it does
cost us time and money per episode to bring this podcast out to everybody.
Yeah, outside of just our own time.
Yes. So anything that if you're a regular listener, anything that you can toss our way to help us cover the cost of the podcast, we'd really appreciate it. So thank you very much. And again, that's over at tips.bscotch.net. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.